Hey guys, welcome to episode one of Loans and Drones. This one is called Train Your Brain with a special person, Sarah Fix, and her daughter, Olivia Fix. Sarah, 28 Ironmans. If you don't know what Ironman racing is, it's 140.6 miles of endurance racing, starting with a 2.4 mile swim, 112 mile bike ride, and up to top it off, 26.2 miles of marathon. Very easy, right? She's done 28 of those. And she's made it to 6 world championships. And let me just be honest, when you put age on there and say that you can't do anything because you're too old, she PR'd her best race at age 50. So don't give me that excuse. And I've done these Ironman races. I'm not nearly as good as she is. It's like a part-time job. It's about 18 to 20 hours a week just training for this crazy race. But she owned a couple companies. So she's got the success story of entrepreneurship. And she was a mother of three. Not to mention, she was a philanthropist giving away funds that she made on these businesses to help people. One being Chicago Hope Academy and then the mental health awareness. Sorry, I lost it a little bit there because there's just so many things that you could say. And then you have her daughter, Olivia Fix, 23 years old, carrying the torch behind Sarah. She's from Alabama, so there you go. But she had a 4.0 straight through. And so she's carrying that torch of a legacy of success. And now she's a teacher down in Atlanta and fourth grade teacher, right? Yeah. Awesome. So there you have it. Now let's get into the story of the family. So let's go back, Sarah, and really talk about how this all started. Let's talk about you and where you were raised.
I was born in Cleveland, Ohio. And then, you know, pretty much was in Ohio till I was, I think, around 9 or so, or a little younger than that. And then we moved to Texas and then moved to the Chicago area. And I went to New Trier and then went off to college in California, the Claremont colleges, and then came back to Chicago to work.
So you have a grandfather who yes. was, tell me a little bit about him.
Okay.
You always bring him up and I'm like so curious.
Oh, so yeah, my grandfather was really incredible. His name is George H. Love. He passed away, it was 1985 or 1989. His business was steel. So he was involved in the steel industry. And he also was the head of Chrysler before Lee Iacocca. So he was, I think at that, I don't know if it still stands, but one of the only people ever in history to be a president, CEO of two Fortune 500 companies at the same time. So he was a real trendsetter. I think he was also really big in starting all the unions. That was one of his big things that he was involved with. But he was a real powerhouse and a real, really incredible person.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So yeah. I didn't get to spend much time with him, but the time that I was with him was usually filled with a lot of laughter because he was so funny, but obviously a really hard worker. And I've had people in my life ask me, you know, hey, where do you think you got this drive and work ethic? And sometimes I think maybe some of my work ethic did come from my grandfather.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to ask. I mean, you came to Chicago out of school and then you started your first business at 24.
I graduated with a sociology and business degree in 3.5 years from the Claremont colleges, which is Pitzer, Pomona, Harvey Mudd, Scripps, and
Jeez, Claremont. I was on McKenna. A 5-year plan.
And so I was there for 3.5 years. And
I'm such an underachiever.
And my program was hotel and restaurant management was my emphasis. So I worked for the Hyatt right out of college. And I loved the program. And then I went on to be the assistant food and beverage director, the assistant to the food and beverage director at the Park Hyatt for a short time. And I all of a sudden was like, I think I want to go to business school. And then in waiting, doing my MCATs and all that stuff, I started just doing side jobs in retail. And I was like, maybe I could open a retail store. That might be kind of fun. So I started looking into that, and I skipped business school, and I ended up opening my own retail shop in downtown Chicago.
What was the name of your business?
It was Jennings.
That's Jennings.
Jennings. My middle name, Sarah Jennings Fix. Jennings, the accessory bar for men and women. And I tore out a bar and used all the bar fixtures to display accessories for men and women. So when you looked in the billiards table, there was little, compartments that had jewelry in them. And when you looked at the back bar and inside the bar, it was all filled with accessories of all sorts. And the dartboard, it was just, you know, there was a jukebox, and it was just in the theme of the bar, which was great for Linkin Park. We were right in Linkin Park.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
So, yeah,
was there drinks there, too? No liquor license?
Cappuccino and espresso.
There you go. All right. And how long did you own that business?
I think that was probably almost, I would say, 9 years.
Okay.
And then I got married, and we moved to the suburbs. So that was sort of the end of that.
Okay.
That period.
Okay, so 9 years, and you were 24, so then you moved out. That was 33?
Yeah.
Moved out here, and then you started having kids.
Yep.
Which, which Livia's sitting right next to you.
Hey!
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about that. Like, what was the move like? How you got in this crazy world of endurance racing? So let's start with the move from Chicago to the suburbs and how this all kind of unraveled.
So I had met David in 97. So it was just had turned 30. So it was turning 31, I think. And I had met David, who is my ex-husband, and he was a triathlete. And I went and watched him do his first, or a triathlon, which I was, and then he got this spot at the triathlon I watched him at, which was Mrs. T's downtown. He got this spot to Kona, the world championships. And at that point he said, would you like to come watch me do the race? And I said, sure. And that was it. Like, the minute I saw that race, I was so amazed by it. And then I thought, I'd like to give this a whirl. So, I started dabbling in it in the final period of living in the city. And then when we moved out to the suburbs, that was sort of my, we started having kids almost right away. But I was kind of already in doing the sport when I moved into the suburbs.
So before that, you'd never ran?
I had run marathons after college.
It's nothing big, yeah, but whatever.
I don't know.
Marathon, what. I think marathon is very, very, I can never conquer that. So that's very tough.
I was really into marathon running. That I wasn't fast, but I loved marathons. I did a lot of marathons.
Okay, but when she says she wasn't fast, she's still probably breaking like 3 hours.
Nope. I think my fastest marathon was 3:17.
Oh my gosh, I was happy if I think I broke 4:1. Yeah, 4.
Yeah, yeah. I bet you did.
I don't know.
You were pretty fast.
No, I couldn't ever finish it. But anyways, it's not about me. It's about you.
Yeah.
That's another
Let's
show.
Compare times.
That's another show. You got in your first race. What was your first race like?
Okay, let's see. So my first race. So I. When David and I started working with David, and he was like, I'll teach you to swim. That didn't really go over so well. So I got a coach, and the coach, he was awesome. Like, he taught me to swim, and he poured his whole, it was one of David's friends. He was a fireman in the city of Chicago. His name is Ron Dornecker. And he started coaching me, and it was him and Libby talked at, he came out and did a race with us.
Yeah, he's my godfather.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he came out and did a race with us last year. And that Livy and him got to hang out a lot. And he was like, yeah, coaching your mom was like a real.
Yeah. Tough. Or he said mom was like the easiest person to coach because she didn't exactly know much about the sport, but was so committed. So anything that he said, she did. And there was no questions asked.
That's
he was the most coachable person.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, so I was obsessed with the sport, like almost right away.
And so it just clicked. Like right when you got into training and he was your coach, things just turned around. Right. And you said, this is it.
Right.
Okay.
And I didn't remember that part of my personality with him, but he was saying like, yeah, he would give me workouts and then I'd be like, oh no, I could do more. I could do more today. Like, tell me, I'll do something else. And he was like, no, you don't need to do more. So I was just really, really hungry to learn and I loved it. And then, so I went on to do my first Ironman before Olivia was born. And then about 4 weeks later, I did my second Ironman, which was Ironman Florida in November, and Livy came literally 9 months later in August. So November was the Ironman, and then Livy came in August. And
wait, so let's back up. So you did your first Ironman, and only 4 weeks later, you did another Ironman. You're supposed to take some time off, aren't you?
Yeah, but I didn't.
And then you got pregnant.
And then I got pregnant right away. There you go.
Just and pop, then, pop, pop. How'd you find time? Well, that's another show, too.
And then I was like, wow.
Tune back for episode two.
No recovery. Yeah. Okay.
And then I was really, I loved the whole thing having Livy. I never thought I'd be a mom. I just didn't envision myself as a mom. And I had Livy. And I've told Livy all this before, but really when she came, it was to me, I felt like she was put in my life to teach me to be a mother.
Wow.
She taught me this like new kind of love. And then just, she was so the best baby. And I just loved being with her so much. And I never thought, because I wasn't a babysitter, and she's done all that. She's a teacher. She's a babysitter. She's been a coach on the swim team. She's always the Pied Pipers with the little kids. I didn't have any of that at all, ever. And so I just didn't trust that I would have this.
Yeah, you weren't even sure you wanted to be a mom for a while.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And then she came and I was like, wow, this is the most unbelievable thing. And so I thought, well, I think I'll do it again. And 3 months later, I was pregnant with Charlie. So then Libby and Charlie are just 13 months apart. And yeah, I had Charlie and same experience. And then that was pretty much it. And then I got back into triathlon because I thought, oh, that's good. I have two. And we were having a good time together, the three of us, just, and we had two dogs and I was training and playing with them. And then,
then you had Andrew.
And then I did.
Then Andrew comes along. So there's number three.
Yeah.
Somewhere. Maybe was born on mile 25.
Well, I'll tell you, the crazy story is I did Ironman Wisconsin as my first comeback race when they were 10 months and 21 months or whatever it was. And I did Ironman Wisconsin and qualified for Kona. And David said, do you want to do Kona or do you want to have another baby? And I said, both.
Wow, what a question.
I know.
What a question from an endurance family.
I know. It's like, I'll take Kona because I don't think I'll ever qualify again. So I should probably do it. But I was getting up there in age. So I did Kona. And Kona was October 13th. And it was Charlie and David's birthday, the day of Kona. The race.
Oh, my gosh.
And then guess when Andrew came? July 30th. Do the math.
So, wait. So you finished the race and then after the race? Or is it before the race? What's going on here?
No.
Chicken or the egg? What happened?
The 13th was the day of the race. And then we went home, but Andrew came July 30th.
Okay. All right.
So that's
there you
only
go.
Like 9 months later.
There's no reason to
slow down.
You can have
no
both,
reason
guys.
To slow down. You can have everything both. All at once. Your banana split.
And there we go. That was baby number three.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. All right. So you got into the whole racing thing. Yep. Did not let it stop life. At that point, that's when you were just doing the sport and being a mom.
Yes.
Right?
100%.
What? Tell me how we led into the business side of things. What happened to get you into the business?
So I was just really hunkered down doing my sport and raising the kids. Yep. And David was working for William Blair and he was going through some ebb and flows with his training and his life and his commitment and love of his business or lack thereof. It was, ebb and flow. And he we thought of every, I was like, why don't you become a teacher? Why don't you? I was trying to think of ideas. And every time I brought up retail, he said, no way. I'll never do retail after watching what you did in the city. He just couldn't believe, like, working 7 days a week. And, you know, my shop was open 7 days a week, and it was open, you know, early in the morning till, you know, 7, 8 o'clock at night. Like any retail store in Lincoln Park and at that period was, they were, retail was thriving in those days. There was no internet. So it was like a great business to be in. And he just thought like there was, he just thought it was the most draining business. So that retail was not an option, but we, I would try and come up for, with ideas for him. And then he kind of snuck on me and came up with this whole Endurit idea. And it did have retail, and that was what was so shocking. Mm. And so he put together this plan, and he opened Endurit. And I was not part of it because he was, that was his thing. And I was taking care of the kids, and I was doing early morning training, and my commitment to my training and to go to Endurit at that point, which was in Naperville, was a far drive for me. And I wasn't really, that wasn't going to work. So I wasn't really part of it. And then we opened some other locations, and we opened a location closer to our home in Hinsdale. And I started to integrate myself into that location with things like Run Club and teaching CompuTrainer. And I had some aha moments. And that was that I had tried, online coaching had started where you could coach people online like I did for you. Mm-hmm. But when I originally started online coaching, it was so, you know, grassroots and so the beginning of time. And there wasn't really, you didn't get enough feedback and you couldn't track them the way we can now. So I felt this big void. And when I went to Endurit and started working with the athletes face to face, I had this aha moment. Like, I love this so much because I could see the development. I could see the pain. I could see the joy. I could see the bad days. I could see the good days. I could see who I could push. I could see who I had to hold back from. And it was just this whole connection that I loved. And I thought, okay, this is for me. Like, I can coach classes at Endurit. And Andrew was in kindergarten. So, and these guys were older. So the hours that were I was coaching were super early in the morning or in the middle of the day when they were at school. So that was really my first job at Endurit. And then slowly but surely, I started to recognize there were some things I was wondering about and then worried about. And then I sort of started bringing things up to David that I was concerned about. And we decided maybe it was my time to sort of take over Endurit. And then he would go back to work and work in a business and in a job. And I took over Endurit, and then I became the sole owner in 2011, I believe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think it was 2011 or 2013.
So, digging a little deeper, what was going on at that time?
I think we had overstretched. I think that retail was in a big trouble with the 2008 and 2009. And David had, which I think really honestly, originally, it was a good idea because there was a demand and a need for it. Retail was doing well. But then once we started into the recession, it was really struggling. And David had expanded to 4 locations. So he had a retail store for clothing and activewear. And he had 2 bike shops. And then he had a small, like, kind of fitness training place. And really, when I started to come into it, I thought, there's so much going on here. Like, how can one person manage all of this? Mm-hmm. Because you had retail for bikes, you had retail and for all the things for the sport of triathlon. You had pro bike shop, meaning places to get your bike fixed. We sold super high-end bikes. Then we started selling other type of bikes. And then we were starting to do the training.
And there was a lifestyle store.
And then the lifestyle store.
Yeah.
I remember.
It was just too many things.
Yeah.
And so I actually hired a business consultant who followed me for like 2 weeks and saw my coaching and saw me in classes and saw me at the lifestyle store and went on a buying, you know, trip with me. and saw me do all the different parts of it, and that said, you have to pick one thing. There's too much here, and you can do any one of these things. You're good at all of it. What do you see? And I'm like, I love the relationship with my customers, and I want to coach people. Ron still was ringing in my ears all the time, and the way he coached me, and it was this really personal relationship. And then I was on this podcast with Mike Riley, the voice of Iron Man, and really, truly, I felt like I wanted people to hear that voice, Mike Riley saying, you are an Iron Man, because that does change your life forever.
Who hasn't gotten into Iron Man racing without wanting to hear Mike Riley say, you are an Iron Man?
I know. It's like so amazing, and families love it. Anybody that hears him yell it, and I loved that whole piece of it so much that I was like, I want to instill this and give this gift to other people. So that was my passion. And I didn't care about selling clothes. And I had already done that down in the city. I kept the bike locations as training facilities. The focus was really about that was all value added to the actual coaching. So, yes, anybody could come off the street and we could sell them a bike and do a bike fit and fix people's bikes. But we got rid of all bikes that didn't have to do with our sport. We only did road and tri bikes. We got rid of all the peripheral stuff. And then it was just, this was all value added to taking care of the Endurant customer. Mm-hmm. So that's really what my whole mission was. And we grew to be the biggest, I think one of the biggest clubs in Illinois, and with a top national ranking and an international ranking.
And I started getting into the triathlon world with a small sprint. And I just remember Endurant was like the team that you wanted to be part of if you wanted to go anywhere and be, have fun and be successful at it. So you guys had that stamp of that success in the community, which was in Naperville. That's where I lived. And by the way, if you don't know how much these bikes are, it's like a mini car. It's what, $5,000-$6,000? You can get up to $15,000. I remember talking.
And now they're retailing at $23,000.
This isn't like just your Schwinn or Huffy that they're selling. So you had a really niche-y type of person. So you had to be in an area that could afford that. Naperville and Hinsdale and these areas were areas that people could afford those bikes. So and also the endurance racing, because you also have traveling and all that expense support that goes along with that. So you took over, and what year was that you took over Endurant?
Really took over, I think by 2013 David was pretty much gone altogether, and then I had a great team. Endurant had a great team. We had our manager was Eric Walter, and then we had a lot of coaches. We had a mechanic staff. We had a pretty big team working at the club.
And you were also building your way out of the stretched 2008 recession market. Like, I want to try to show people how it went from a deficit to profitable. Tell me about that.
Oh God. Well,
whoops.
bad question.
There was a lot of cutting back. There was a lot of cutting back. There was moving out of really fancy, fancy locations and into much less fancy locations.
Smaller.
We had a building that we owned where we had our clothing shop, and I sold that building. It was a really, really hard time because Endurant was in so much trouble. We were so overstretched and our income was so fragmented, and it just took a ton of work to figure out how to, it was just a lot of work to navigate getting, fixing it. It was needed to be fixed. But like I said, with the business consultant and really focusing and honing in on what my skills were and what set revenue streams we could count on. And with my strength, building things around me that were going to bring in a revenue stream that was all in the same direction versus all these separate items. So once we recognized, okay, it's going to be a club. Well, what can you do with a club? Well, obviously we started indoor training and really streamlined that program. Like you could sign up online and you know, just like you could at a big Lifetime Fitness. Like it was very, you could sign up for run club. You could sign up for swim team. You could sign up for indoor cycling. And then we had a whole online coaching presence. And then we did camps all over the country. So we, you know, people paid a good amount of money and we would go and support these athletes in camps all over from California all the way to Wisconsin. And we would do team races and things that were all geared towards our athletes and that were building the bottom line. So versus, you know, just kind of it being so fragmented. I mean, it also just took, it's kind of like cleaning up a house. I mean, when a house is really, really dirty, you've got to like pitch stuff and start almost over. And that's what I spent a lot of time doing, was really cleaning things up. And then we kind of started all anew. And we built this really strong little business.
That's awesome. What was the time frame like from that point to when you started seeing profits come in?
Gosh, I wish my accountant was here.
I thought Livy was your accountant. Yeah. Wasn't she part of that? We'll get to you, Livy. Don't worry.
Well, I love listening.
I think, probably took about 3 years to really get it to a place that we were standing on our own 2 feet again.
So you had the business, and so how long did you have the business, and then you turn it around? So you had the business.
So
for
it
how
started
long
in 2005.
2005 to
and 2013. And about 2011, I started in by 2013, I was like, wow, we need some help. And I would say by 2018, I think we were really on solid ground.
Ah, great work.
A lot of digging.
So that leads me to the theme of this is train your brain. And you basically, you've said that numerous times when I've been training with you. Where did that start? Where did that take hold? And then I want to get to Livy and also ask a follow-up question. So answer that, and then we're going to get to Livy too.
The best part of the whole interview.
No, like, no, not. Yes. Well, yes. Yes. No, you're both are the best part of the interview. So you're both beautiful people.
Okay, yeah. But, so train your brain. I just, my biggest thing in everything, every part of me is, and in coaching athletes, is if you start to let yourself off the hook, if you start to give yourself
an out,
it will keep happening. Success breeds success. Giving yourself the option to be a failure or fail, it's a cycle. And once you've done it, it's like teaching yourself to run. You practice a little bit, practice a little more, and before you know it, you're running. Same thing with not running. You bag it, blow it off. Oh, you know what? That was easy. That didn't feel so bad to blow it off. Oh, I'll blow it off again. I won't show up. I'll make an excuse. You know, and you start to do that and live in that cycle of letting yourself off the hook and creating excuses and realizing it doesn't feel that bad or thinking it doesn't feel that bad. And unfortunately, you know, then it just creates a way of being. And like, I believe in all life, that's what you don't want to do. You want to train your brain and you want to set yourself up to win. So, you know, of course, there's going to be times where you fall and hurt yourself and this, that, and the other thing. But still, the message is get back up and still try and move forward. And, you know, I just don't have, unfortunately, you know, it sounds horrible, but I don't have tolerance really for something different than that. And I, as a coach and as a leader of Endurit, that was something that was, you know, people would be like, she's tough. You know, she's really hard. And I am tough. And I am really hard on the people that I coach because I believe in them. They told me they wanted to be coached. They told me they wanted to do an Ironman. I believe you. When you tell me something, I believe you. So I'm going to get you there. And I'm not going to get you there with you making up an excuse and backing out of things. You know, it just doesn't, it doesn't sit with me.
I mean, I was also coached by her too. So was she. So I remember those days when I did not want to get up and Sarah would call me at 5:15. Where are you at? You got to be here. And you know what? It was a physical endurance training program, but it also had a lot of life aspect. And that's why I love talking to you about this, because it's kind of a parallel world. You know, you're moving all the time and you're training your brain to actually stay on the course, stay in this long race, but then that goes along with life. Right. I mean, life is not a sprint, it's a marathon. And right. You're teaching people life goals along with it. I don't know if you know that, but that's so after I left Endura and actually got into the world that I'm in with the mortgages, business took off. And that I would attribute to the training that you gave me with regards to a physical activity that led into a business world activity too.
Right. The other day when I was speaking with Mike Riley and we were talking about mental strength, and I really do believe like how you're attributing it to my training, I attribute like some of my strength to Ironman. And I do believe that because of my training and the way I trained myself and not letting myself off the hook and doing it so I was successful at Ironman, that strength also has helped me now move forward in this next lot in life, which has been this diagnosis of cancer, and how I've been able to take that brain and
apply it.
Right, right.
Okay, let's talk about living.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Okay, so Livy.
Bill.
What was your perception? Because here's the other thing, too. We were talking about this before we came on, and moms have mom guilt, and you've brought this up before too. And I, being a newer parent, my wife Laura has talked about it too. And she's like, there's that mom guilt. So
yeah,
from a child being raised in this highly
intense
world, mom training for Ironman, mom and dad both training for Ironman, working, owning a business. What was your perspective on this?
Well, I do think it helped the fact that I was a little bit older when my mom fully dove back into endurance. So I did have like the beginning part of my life was very much so mom was around. And so I think that is definitely helpful. And I also think my mom just did such a good job of never making it feel like it was me or training. Like she would wake up at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning and she would have her training done before I woke up. And then she was there to make me breakfast and take me to school. And then she went to endure it. So she just did a really good job of balancing both, where I never felt. And then she also did a good job of including me and my brothers in endure it. Like we felt like we were involved, whether that was like volunteering or working or whatever it was. So it never really felt like there was really a need to be guilty because I was either there or she was there, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Does that answer the question?
Yeah, that was good. That was really good.
Yeah, but I don't know. Yeah, she just did a good job balancing both. And I'm sure, like, maybe there were times where it stuck out to you of, I wish I was there, but I never felt that way.
Yeah, and I think on the days, like, on weekends when, you know, we would do team things, long, long bike rides, you know, on Saturdays. And
yeah,
our Sundays were typically that that run day for the team. Mm-hmm. But like on Saturdays, you know, those long bike rides in the summer, they were either like doing their own thing or they were on swim team that was an all day experience. And then David really dropped out of triathlon in 2011, he was pretty much done. So like Saturdays, David would be with the kids. So, you know, and a lot of parents are divide and conquer. A lot of parents have more than one child. So, you know, you've got one parent at soccer and one parent at this and one parent. So, you know, somehow we just made it work.
I think like that there would be like a couple times where it was like we were always the last kids picked up. like the coaches are always
who
like,
"Who hasn't been?
I've all
been
for, right, I've been like let's call mom again." You know, so things like that. But
that might have happened without me coaching or training. Right, that's just me.
Well, I've gotten left before. Don't worry. Yeah. I walked 16 miles home, and I wasn't even training for an Ironman at that point. Yeah. I don't know what my dad was doing. I don't even. So that was as a child, right? Mm-hmm. So you kind of buffered any of the craziness. So you didn't get to see that internally, yeah. Right? So it kind of looked like normal to you. It kind of looked like normal to you, or what was your?
Are you talking about like the bit, like how the business was doing?
Yeah, yeah.
I think kids are smarter than they let on, and I was 8 or 9 when that was going on. So I knew that there was problems for sure. Yeah, I definitely knew that there was problems, and I knew that there was a reason mom was stepping up more into that role and why dad was taking a step back. I definitely knew. I mean, I don't think I knew like the full, actually, I think I thought it was worse than it was. Like I was fully convinced that I would like yell at my brothers for like asking for a soda. Like I was like, oh my gosh, we are so like gonna die. you know, like,
let's get a boat.
Yeah.
Where's a raft? Let's get out of this. Everybody jump out of the windows.
But then it, you know, it sort of figured itself out. So
yeah. Yeah.
And my mom was like always so good at her job. Like I always remember that. Like I would feel uncomfortable because she was like such a good salesperson. Like she was like, no, you need it. And they were like, okay. And I was like, oh my gosh, you just like are forcing someone to buy a $1,000 bike right now. This is so crazy.
I bought 3.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think there's-
She is a good salesperson, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, she's so good and she's so knowledgeable. So I think I just picked up from a young age, like this was what mom was supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Anytime, girl.
I love it. So last question for you, now graduated and you're looking back at this. What is this, like as far as the legacy goes, what has that meant to you?
I think my mom is such a hard worker and so intense. And I think for like all of my high school, I was like, I'm so not like that. I'm so go with the flow. Like I'm much more like my dad. And I think once I got to college and I was on my own, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm way more like my mom than I thought. Like I was up and running early in the morning so I could go to, because I was student teaching, so I'd go student teach until 4 and then I would come back. Like my friends would make fun of me. Like it was college, like, you know, we'd do things on Friday night and then on Saturday morning I was up at like 5:30 in the morning going on my rush for no reason. And then I'd go to the library. Like I just think that she, because I watched it for so long, I just followed in her footsteps more than I really realized.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it is okay to include your kids in your
100%.
Work life?
Totally.
Really? I see a lot of real estate agents, moms especially, that are like, I got to separate it. I got to separate it. And I don't think that is necessarily the way, because I think people appreciate the fact that there is women out there that are working hard and they're including kids in this.
Yeah.
I think kids, to see your kids working hard is not a bad thing.
No, I think it made me a much better person. Like having a mom who, and granted, I don't know what it would be like if I was like itty bitty, but I think those formative years having two parents that worked really hard instilled in me and my brothers, like we are all workers, you know?
That's awesome. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the one thing I appreciate about Sarah too and how she's led her life is she did it her way. And that's kind of the second part of this, is that she's done it her way. And I think so many times we can get critical on ourselves with how the world views us and how the perception of everybody on the outside, especially with social media right now, like everybody's trolling people and saying, you should do this and judging you. Mm-hmm. You know what? Do it your way, right? I mean, right. Am I wrong in that?
No, you're not wrong at all. You're not wrong at all.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I feel... I
wasn't answer. Super convincing.
No, I feel like I had some, you know, being a mom in Hinsdale, I mean, I've talked about this with somebody recently. I always was wondering, like, I wasn't like any other mom. I mean, I was so committed to my kids. I love my kids so much. It was like my kids and my sport. And I used to think like, okay, you guys are judged. I felt judged in Hinsdale by other families. And I thought, you know what? It's weird because you will go out to your country club or go out drinking or go to bars or go to the city. I don't do that. I'm at home on the weekends with my kids. Like, my social and my is really about my kids and my keeping my body healthy. Like, those were my choices that I made. And I had friends, but like, I didn't have this crazy social life at all, not even close. I mean, my social life was really Endurit and providing this service for the athletes. And that's where my dedication was. And I really have felt now that I am conquering what I'm conquering, which is the biggest wall I've ever climbed, which is this cancer thing. And I say to myself, you know what? I'm so proud of the person that you are. If I was judged or not judged or whatever, I don't care anymore, because the person that I am is the person that's doing the things she's doing right now, which in my mind are incredible. Mm. Like, I am carrying on with, you know, stage 4 cancer. And I think that's attributed to the individual I am, as I am. And I think that's what we want to celebrate in people, that it's okay to be different and it's okay to do things differently. You don't have to do it like everybody else. And, you know, I think we're all going through so many different things, whether all the sexual stuff and all the stuff that's out there now. And it's like, just letting people be who they are and celebrating who they actually are is, like, I think the best thing you can do.
Yeah, I love that. And I value you too. And I think you're a beautiful person. You are an inspiration to me and a best friend. I mean, she started out as a coach, but then we became such good friends throughout the years, like a brother and sister relationship. Yep. And I'm inspired by you and your endurance through start to finish, from as a business owner, a triathlete, and now dealing with the stage 4 cancer, like you said. You're training your brain to live through this life and inspire other people. And thank you for that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Yeah, you're welcome.
Happy.
All right, so we'll wrap it up with some light speed questions, and then we'll close the show.
Okay.
So if you, this goes out to both of you, but if you could have dinner with anybody, any celebrity in the world today, who would it be?
I know this is crazy, but it would be Lance Armstrong.
Ooh, Lance.
Lance. We could talk cancer.
Okay. Call me.
Good icebreaker, Lance. Okay.
Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift, if you're listening, I would love to have dinner with you anytime. Bring Travis.
All right. Bring Travis. Bring everybody. Bring the team. Second question, comfort food.
I love all food.
Me too.
Is there one thing that sticks out that comes to mind? First thing.
My first, like, gut is chicken nuggets and fries, but I really think it's pasta. Like, I love, like, a...
Mom's pasta.
Well, well, I mean, you probably like had pasta bolognese. Every Friday.
Yeah. Love.
I'm saying carb days, right? Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Every day's a carb
day. My favorite... Well, I love desserts. I mean, like,
Love dessert.
Well, I love ice cream, like, really good ice cream, like Oberweis and cookies. And then my favorite food is, I'm going to say pasta too. I love pasta.
Okay. I thought it was your big bowl at the beginning of the day.
Oh, yeah.
She had this crazy, so she basically would make a huge cereal bowl, right?
Yeah.
Before she'd train. It was as tall as
And Bill only her. Knows this because he's been to so many of our camps. And all the athletes would watch me eat my breakfast. And they're like, revolting.
She was a racehorse. She was just, it was a feed bag. So last question. If you could be, if you could travel anywhere in the world today, where would it be?
Ooh. Sicily.
Sicily.
Yeah. Right. I want to go back to Italy so bad.
Really? Mm-hmm. Okay.
We went different parts.
We went on an Italian trip together.
We did.
Okay.
We rocked it out hard.
We did. It was the best week ever. Two weeks.
Just a week. Yes.
Yeah. It was like 12 long. Days.
Yeah. Well, I get kind of jealous.
Oh, you want to go to Africa?
Yeah, I want to go to Africa so bad. And I get kind of jealous. My sister takes her kids on all these crazy trips. They're going to Vietnam today. They're leaving to Vietnam. And I think like any of that Thailand and that area I would love to see.
Good.
Yeah. I mean, I love traveling.
Well, so that's one of the places I'd like to go to, Thailand, because I don't know. I love seeing animals and you can go have elephant experiences. I want to pet a baby elephant. Yeah,
you want to ride the elephant?
Yeah. Why not? Who doesn't want to ride an elephant?
Get Bill to Thailand, guys. Stream drones and loans. Loans and drones.
Don't say that because all of a sudden I'm going to go bankrupt, okay? So thank you so much for joining us. This has been a pleasure, seriously. I knew it was going to be a rock star moment for us to be able to interview these two. And Loans and Drones, this is first episode. She made it on number one podium. Both of them are leaving a legacy, training their brain, and doing it their way. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you on the next episode.